for tuning into Words and Culture. Remember to check out our website at wordsandculture.ca, where you can find language apps and start your own language journey. Écossais, be well, keep smiling.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Ekose.
Kakuhutau. We'll see you again.
Hello and welcome to Viewpoints on today's show. Journalist Mike McCullough will again fill in for me this week, as he did last week with a documentary produced in Abbotsford, British Columbia. We'll be meeting with the musician Shamir Virgo, a singer-songwriter from Surrey, BC, who's enjoying some success. His song, Roses, has more than 1.7 million listens on Spotify and SoundCloud.
One of the first songs that he showed me that he wrote was a song called Roses. The first line, it's just a killer line. It goes, heartache covered in roses. You know, like, what a way to start a song. And then, boom, you're hooked. You're drawn right in.
Mike McCullough, who will spend this half hour with Virgo, as well as with some of his friends and mentors.
The first day we met, we ended up just writing Roses.
Yeah, we kind of like built off of it.
I don't know, it just came out naturally.
And then we're writing the song back and forth, had it on a loop.
When it came time to write the chords for Roses, and I was like, you know what? Let's apply some of the jazz harmony that we're learning. You know, after a few more writing sessions, we had a finished song between the two of us, and it came up fairly easily.
Yeah. Oh, Wait.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I got sick of the sorrow, but I want to see you tomorrow.
With Shamir, we kind of go back and forth with this song since the last show even.
Yeah.
And it's been one of those fun spots for us. For sure.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I enjoy it. But, keeps me going.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Greetings, nice to have you with us. My name is Boris Chassaigne. Shamir Virgo is a 23-year-old rhythm and blues recording artist and songwriter from Surrey, BC, who, when he's not attending class at the University of the Fraser Valley, has recently been wowing crowds and gaining a fan base performing around the Lower Mainland. Virgo is enjoying some early success with The Algorithm, one of his first songs, a track called Roses, which he wrote with friend Amir Kuro, has more than 1.7 million listens on Spotify and SoundCloud. In this brief look at one of Canada's exciting new artists, Mike McCullough in Abbotsford caught up with Shamir and some of Shamir's friends, collaborators, and one-time mentor. Here's Mike McCullough.
This is Shamir Virgo.
Heartache covered in roses. I'm done trying to control it. I'm waiting for you to see.
I genuinely just really love, I have a really great big love for music.
But I'd rather be with you than in my dreams.
Very blessed. Very blessed to be here right now and to be able to express and share my art in the way that I do. Yeah. Thank you.
Baby, I can show you.
His likability was infectious. Everybody loved him.
He is so thoughtful and he is so sweet. It's great to know someone as awesome and talented as him.
You smile again.
I also have him as a really, really close friend.
Shamir was the complete package.
I'm waiting for you to see.
He has dope music.
Music for him is part of a thread in the tapestry of developing a community.
Community is very important, not just with music, but just in general. It's very important for just us as humans.
Heartache
covered in roses.
Roses by Shamir Virgo and Amir Koro. Yeah, Shamir told me that was the second song he ever wrote. And we'll get into that and much more in a conversation with Shamir on this edition of Viewpoints, brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative. I met with Shamir at CIVL Studios in the Student Union Building of the University of the Fraser Valley's Abbotsford campus. So nice to meet you, Shamir.
Nice to meet you, too.
That was the first of three meetups I had with Shamir over the course of about a week. The second was when Shamir and guitarist Elijah Williams welcomed me to a park in Surrey to see and hear their rehearsal for an upcoming show.
You got the list. Whoa.
I know.
In our interview, Shamir speaks about how much a collective he's part of called Couch Jams Collective offers him a sense of community. I was able to visit with Shamir in Vancouver and meet about a dozen plus people affiliated with Couch Jams gathered after a performance in the Mount Pleasant area. And Shamir, you know, he took the time to one by one introduce me to each and everyone there. And although I didn't record any interviews that night, I did come away with an impression of a young man who, for as musically talented as Shamir is, he is equal parts kind, thoughtful, and generous. An opinion shared, by the way, by Shamir's former high school musical theater teacher, John Harris, and ditto those sentiments from friend and musical collaborator, Amir. All right, let's get to know Shamir Virgo. This track is apropos, as it was the first song Shamir wrote. It's 2019's Fade in Love.
I think I was always, like, involved in music, like, growing up. So, like, when I was younger, I used to sing in church. We used to have, like a children's choir that I would, like, sing at, and we would just, like, be doing, like, different arrangements of different songs, and then we would go and, like, perform them for, like, Saturday church or, like, just performances, like, concerts that we would host. And then, like, in high school, I did some, like, musical theater, and then also just kind of dabbled in music, so I've always been around it. Somewhere along the lines of, like, end of high school, I was like, wow, like, I really love music, I really enjoy and embody, like, all that I want to be when I'm around music, so, like, why don't I, like, create something, you know? My teacher, Mr. Harris, he was the one that kind of, like, fostered that growth. He was the one that pushed me forward and was like, hey, you should continue to do this. You should continue to, you know, pursue music. You sound great. This is something that, like, not a lot of people are able to do or able to, like, even stick with or even have the drive to stick with. And if you love it so much, then you should continue to do it. Yeah.
I thought back in those days, I don't know where his future is going to take him, but I really, really hope that he pursues this gift. And he has.
Mr. Harris, if it wasn't for him, I'd say I probably wouldn't be doing this right now.
To be able to be a part, be a small little, tiny little building block in the life of a student like that is a great honor. And it gives a meaning and a purpose to how you've spent your life in a way that's incredibly gratifying. My name's John Harris. I taught Shamir at a Langley Public School. It was called the UConnect Education Center. It was actually in three different locations, but Shamir participated in two of them, I think.
This was at Lochiel UConnect, so out in Langley.
Shamir showed right from the get-go tremendous musical aptitude.
I feel I just fell in love with you like a song on the radio.
He was a dream to work with as a musical theater teacher. I find that it's very difficult to get a blend of skills where a student can act and sing well. And Shamir was, right from the beginning, the complete package.
Are you different? Feels different.
The thing that really struck me musically was that not only did he have the musical skills, he had just excellent pitch and phenomenal ability to learn music quickly.
Case in point, here's Shamir with Elijah working out Emmanuel's Need You.
I feel I need you to breathe. Yeah. I feel I need you to breathe.
his voice was a mixture between this soothing melodic sound with some bite if he needed it. Really unusually beautiful tonal qualities in his voice. The love
is pure. For me, it started out as just wanting to like do something that I enjoyed, and music being the thing that I really, really did enjoy. I was like, well, I really want to dive headfirst into this. And so I didn't really know what that looked like, you know, and like what I had to do to grow at that point. But over now, looking back over the years, because of my like love for music and wanting to like get better and know more about it, it sort of became the driving force that led me to like want to do better and want to know more and want to improve my craft and as a singer, as well as just like a musician as well, because I play guitar. And so, yeah, it just really drove me to do better and want to know more. I think at that point I had just started dabbling in terms of just like songwriting, just putting things together here and there. I think I had like made my first single at that point, and then I had just shown him some of the stuff that I had done, because it's just like, you know, you were around music, like not a lot of people at that time in my life were musicians or really understood or cared to understand like music in general. So I was just like, okay, like this is something that I've done, like what do you think, what are your thoughts, you know?
One of the first songs that he showed me that he wrote was a song called Roses. The first line, it's just a killer line. It goes, heartache covered in roses. Like what a perfect tension between some of the nicer parts of love and the inevitable challenges of love. You know, like he in a couple of words, he paints a picture that like a paradoxical cognitive dissonance that, you know, like what a way to start a song. And then boom, you're hooked. You're drawn right in.
A good friend of mine, Amir Koro, he also makes music as well. He was the one that actually like put all of the, or most of the instrumentation together in terms of like the arrangement. I was just looking for people to work with in terms of like musicality, because at that point I didn't know anybody around me really who did music or knew about music. And so I was just asking around. And one of my friends, Jay, who I had played with at church, he had connected me to Amir. He was like, yeah, like my friend Amir, he also makes music, like you guys should connect.
What's really interesting actually is that Shamir and I have mutual friends through church. So the same friends that I grew up playing with at church are also the ones that he knows.
I shot him a message.
He first sent me an Instagram DM
and like asked if he would be free to, I guess, meet up and like talk about, you know, our musical experiences, and he responded.
And so it was a really, really natural connection.
Kind of started from there and just continued to talk. And then
he asked, hey, do you want to get together and perhaps work on some music? And so I said, yeah, absolutely. Would love to.
That led down the road of being able to like jam and just sing with him. And
given that we were both, you know, at that time in the same, you know, kind of in the same communities, kind of like going to the same things, listening to the same music, it just felt very natural to infuse that into our own styles.
Yeah, that's how it started.
He was a really, really nice guy, so it was a no-brainer to me, you know, to go and collaborate together and have fun. The first day we met, we ended up just writing Roses.
Yeah, we kind of like built off of it.
I don't know, it just came out naturally.
And then we're writing the song back and forth, had it on a loop.
When it came time to write the chords for Roses, I was still studying actually at Capilano, and I was at Capilano's jazz program. And I was like, you know what? Let's apply some of the jazz harmony that we're learning. Let's put it on a song. And, you know, after a few more writing sessions, we had a finished song between the two of us, and it came up fairly easily. He also takes initiative really well. If there's something that he wants to get done and he's like, I'll write the verse and get back to you, he will do it. The entire second verse of Roses was written entirely by him. After our first session, I was like, oh, we're missing a second verse. And he said, sure, I'll write it. And so then he just came back to me the next week and then said, all right, done. And I was like, this is great.
And then after the song was finished, we went and outsourced like different musicians that would be able to uplift the track and uplift the song better than we knew how to.
And the rest is history.
Today, between Spotify and SoundCloud plays, Roses has been listened to somewhere around 1.7 million times. And back at the park rehearsal, the song has continued to take on a life of its own.
Oh, wait. Keep going.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
sick of the sorrow, but I want to see you tomorrow.
With Shamir, we kind of go back and forth with this song since the last show even.
Yeah.
And it's been one of those fun spots for us. For sure.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I enjoy it. But, yeah. Keeps me going. That's a spicy one.
That's okay. It all sounded nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was good.
Keep it simple, keep it clean. Yes, what you said.
I'm Elijah. I'm the guitarist accompanying Shamir.
We locking in.
Yeah. How did it feel?
Good.
Yeah. Anything that you're like.
Later on, if we have time, we can kind of run through
later.
It again.
After?
Cool. I can clear it.
Hey, it's Shamir Virgo, and you're listening to Viewpoints.
Real. Okay, cool. We're more than halfway through already. Can you believe that? You're doing pretty well for time.
His likability was infectious. Everybody loved him, and he was there's an authenticity, a transparency, an intelligence, and this one's really important. He tunes in to other people, and he will immediately establish strong empathetic bonds. He can get right inside your soul. He was just a part of everybody's heart. You know, like everybody's heart just opened to him.
Shamir is incredibly easy to work with. He is so thoughtful, and he is so sweet, and he is so generous. And I think the things that make him a great friend are also what make him a great collaborator, because he's also not afraid to be like just fully honest and say, that wasn't, I'm not feeling that. Yeah, no, let's not do that. He is great to work with, and he can also hold his own solo.
Shout out to me. You know, yeah. It was a great experience working with him. He's a very, very, very talented and accomplished musician as well as artist. Yeah.
Hopefully I'll see him next spring or summer. We'll see if we can cook up some music together. But most importantly, just have a good time. I haven't seen him in 2 years, so that's long overdue.
He's going to school in Berkeley now, so he's pursuing his own path musically, which is great. Love that for him.
I'm literally at Berkeley right now, actually.
Mir, love you very much. I miss you. We'll connect soon. We'll connect very, very soon.
Shamir would submit those first two tracks of his, Faded Love and Roses, to the CIVL Radio presented Fraser Valley Music Awards in 2020, winning the award for excellence by a BIMPOC artist. That's Black, Indigenous, Mixed, Race, or Person of Color.
Thank you so much to everybody that's been able to support me and my music, and just be there to support me as a person of color. I just really appreciate receiving this award, and it really means a lot that I've come so far in the little time that I've been making music.
Shamir would go on to win first runner-up in the Dakota Leslie fan vote in that same awards broadcast, and station manager Aaron Levy gave him a call.
Yeah, we're giving you $2,100. Shamir, do you have any plans of what you're going to do with this money?
Oh my, I think I'm just going to reinvest it and keep on working, keep on doing the same thing I've been doing, and just continue my journey of music. This is just really crazy, oh my.
Through that, I was able to meet a lot of really great people and then gain more opportunities that way. It's been through connections through like Civil or like the UFE campus. It's been opportunities like that, just meeting people and being on campus.
And while Shamir is sure to continue creating memories on campus at UFV while he completes a Bachelor of Arts majoring in communications, his quest to build his career often leads him to Vancouver.
That's where most of the opportunities are, you know, and that's just like how it is. And it's like you have to get up and go where the money is, essentially, if that's like what you are doing to like make a living. A lot of the people I am working with and or collaborating with now, I met through the collective I'm also a part of and work with, Couch Jams Collective. And I had met the founder of Couch Jams, Matthew Yang. We actually met through Amir. So Amir and Matt, I believe, went to school together at Capilano University, and then I guess we had started talking from there and then just continued to be in touch. It started out as literally like an open mic or like a jam at Matt's house, and then through that we built Couch Jams into like a collective where people can come together and collaborate and grow and just, you know, experience just different art by other people that look like us. Our open mic series operates out of the Vancouver Black Library, so out in Chinatown at the Sunwa Center. Every month we usually host a open mic, and so BIPOC people can come, put their name down, and sign up to perform. And then they're also accompanied by musicians who also sign up to come play for them. And it's a great space to be able to like show your art, to a group of people who you might not know for the first time. We use our platform to be able to promote and uplift queer and BIPOC artists out in the city. So giving them like a space to be able to like perform, but not only like just perform their music, but then give them an arrangement and then pay all the musicians for their work. Because I feel like the music scene in Vancouver especially is very like lacking. So there's not a lot of community. There's not a lot of places that you can go to connect with musicians and artists and creatives that also indulge in the same type of work that we do.
And just trying to reduce all of these memories I have of all of the musicals we did into, you know, kind of a short summation to, you know, capture the essence of this wonderful young man. Music for him is more than a craft. It's more than just doing, excelling at performing. It's more than just writing good songs. Music for him is just a thread, part of a thread in the tapestry of developing a community.
It's become like a very integral thing for me because I really stand behind community, and I really love that Couch Jams is able to offer that to so many people.
The music's important, but it's not the main thing. It's a thread that will tie together a community of people that enjoy each other and bond with each other. That's what it is. That captures what he's all about.
Community is very important, not just with music, but just in general. It's very important for just us as humans. And I feel like a lot of people want community in Vancouver, but that's something that we don't have a lot of here, you know? And so I think it's very important because community is literally like, if you have a community around you, if you're going through a tough time, you're able to lean on that community for support in those times that you might not be able to do things like on your own. And it's very important for you to be able to like have people to like maybe bounce ideas off of. Yeah, that's what I think. It's very important to have community. That's why we started Couch Jams, because we want to be able to bring all the BIPOC people together so that we can like experience and be a part of a community that didn't exist until, you know. Me being from here, I feel like it hasn't separated me from like my culture, but I feel like it's distanced my closeness to it. So like I got family. My family's from Jamaica. I was born here, so I'm Jamaican originally. But I haven't spent very much time there. So in terms of like my music and like that whole aspect, they're really known for like their reggae music, Bob Marley, the Wailers, all of those, you know, that different style of music. None of my music sounds like that. And it's interesting because I feel like also in growing up here and not having like a bunch of, like I have family here, but in terms of just like musicality and being around like that genre of music, I'm very like distanced from it. I would love to experience it more, but in terms of just like my accessibility to that, it's been very limited, you know? So I think in terms of like my experience in that and my identity as an artist, it's almost been like, it's been very internalized. And so like a lot of the things that I feel in terms of like my music and how I should sound, it's not only like the outside, but a lot of how I feel towards myself. Like, oh, should I be indulging in this type of music because this is who I am? But then also it's like, if I didn't grow up around it, you know, what am I supposed to do? You know, so it's not like I can just, you know, go and, you know, do it now that I'm, now that I know like this is who I am. It's just a little bit, it's more deeper than that. With my skin being such like the first thing people see, it's important for me to know what gravity and what effect that I might have on people when they see and hear me. And so just being able to understand like that aspect, as well as also like what other people that look like me have done. But I also think that it's important to also realize that people are people, and that just because I am a black artist doesn't mean that I make a certain type of music or sound a certain type of way, despite what is shown through social media in terms of just how artists now are marketed to be, especially people who look like me.
Shamir insists that his love, his passion for music is the primary driving force motivating him, not dreams of fame and fortune.
Honestly, I think that's the issue. I think a lot of artists like want to be big, and that's why they want to be artists. I think for me, like I genuinely just really love, I have a really great big love for music. Like I just, even if I'm not being paid for it, I'm not saying I don't want to be paid for it, but even if I'm not paid for like what I am able to create, like I think the grounding thing for me with like sharing my music, my thing is that like as long as I'm able to touch something in the person hearing my songs, I am happy. I'm sold. That's all I need to feel, you know, blessed.
And how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm in a much better place than I was like earlier this year, for sure. I actually had like a bit of a like a car accident. There's a lot that I feel like could have gone wrong, and the fact that I'm here to be able to speak my truth is a testament to how blessed I am.
Let's have another sample of Shamir's music. Here's part of his latest single, I Don't Need You. Waiting.
Why couldn't I leave it behind, staying? That was the last song I was able to work on with Amir before he left to go to Berkeley.
I produced that song in collaboration with another really great producer, Gabe Yaron.
We had finished it a couple years ago.
It's representative of a certain period in time for the two of us.
We were both like going through some things at that point.
I'm very proud of what we were able to make.
Very proud, very happy to be able to point people to it when they ask about my music. I don't need you
anymore.
He gets it.
He gets it.
There are some individuals that are destined to make the world a better place, and he's one of them.
Who he appears as in his songs is exactly who he is as a person. And I just can't wait for the rest of the world to get to know that.
For Viewpoints and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Mike McCullough.
So thanks so much to Mike McCullough and his many guests for filling in for us this week. A great documentary again. Thanks to all our journalists who took over the show for me over the past weeks with original and beautiful documentaries. Jules Bugiel in Montreal, Quebec. And to our BC journalists, Pamela Hassan and Smithers, as well as Mike McCullough in Abbotsford. Please come back anytime. To our national editors who help coordinate production, Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Merci. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative. If you want to get in touch with us, please write. Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. Okay, that's it for us this week. And until the next,
you heard me twice, and I'm on my last excuse. And though it's crazy, maybe it's not your intention, but what if maybe the problem is you? And I say, I don't need you anymore. I don't need you. No, 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 no. All out of patience, I'm all out of love to give you now. I don't need you. I don't need you anymore. I said waiting. Foot out the door, I'm saying I ran out of room for you. Cause every time you hold me once, you hurt me twice. And I made my last excuse. And though it's crazy, maybe it's not your intention, but no more maybes. I know the problem is you. And I say that I don't need you anymore. So I don't need you. No, 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 no. All out of patience, I'm all out of love to give you now. I don't need you. I don't need you anymore. Say,
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
Going down and set it straight. When all is said and done, it ain't about you. I thought you were
And I say, so I don't need you,
I don't need
anymore. So I don't need you. No, 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 no. All out of patience, I'm all out of love to give you love. I don't need you, I don't need you anymore. Say, I'm all out of love to give you now. I don't need you, I don't need you anymore. I don't need you, I don't need you anymore.
All right, welcome back to another week of Plugged in My Ears. We're all excited here with some big sports news. Starting off with Sam, he's got some stuff he wants to talk to you guys about this week.
Oh boy, do I ever have some stuff to talk about, but let's get right into it. Just a funny thing, the Toronto Maple Leafs stayed $1 under the cap limit for the season. Pretty amusing, but on to bigger, better fish to fry. Seattle has the first ever professional women's coach in the NHL, Jessica Campbell. She's ready to make her debut with Kraken as first woman to coach in the NHL. She coached last year with Coachella in the AHL. She ran a fantastic power play with them. She's also already coached the Finnish national team and the German men's national team. And she has two really cool tattoos that come from there. Although I think this shows that hockey's growing a lot. I'm not sure if you guys have any takes on this particularly, but I thought it was interesting to mention.
Yeah, I think it's just, if you're a good coach, you're a good coach, right? Like, that's just how it works. And she's definitely proven herself. So, yeah, I mean, looks good. I honestly, on another note, like, I not say I have problems with the current coaching, like the old coaching of the Kraken. I didn't really like their play style.
Like the crash and hit and drive the net rather than play.
They played old style hockey. Yeah. They played old style hockey. And you know what? You're not going to win playoffs like that. You never will. They'll win some regular season games, sure. But yeah, you're not going to go like that far with that kind of play style, right? They just kind of beat the other team down with some big defensemen. And one of the most interesting things about them is that every single NHL team nowadays plays with cycling D. Like, you cycle your D in the offensive zone to generate more chances. They don't cycle their D, right? They play old defense where the two D just stay on the point, don't move.
Take slap shots.
Yeah, the average height on their defense was like 6'6 or something crazy. Like, that's huge. And they basically just crushed the other team until they were too injured to move around. And they'd win by like one or two goals. So, yeah. Not, and they had, I don't think they had a single player on their team that was over 20 goals. They had a very like distributed team, so there was no star players.
I think you're right, actually. I'm trying to think.
So anyways, you know what? I'm not disappointed personally that they're switching things up, because they were, I have to say, not the most fun team to watch in the NHL. They kind of just played a slow hockey game and just scraped by with wins. So yeah, that's good news to me.
Adam, what do you think?
Points or goals, what did you say?
Oh, we were, it's the goals over 20 a season.
They had two. They had Jared McCann with 29 and Bjorkstrand with 20, but neither of them are really star players.
I think the point was more that they barely had any star players. Right? It was pretty distributed.
Yeah, although I will say one thing about the Kraken in general. Is it Kraken or Kraken? I can never get that right. But
it's Kraken.
Kraken, I will say Kraken then. But they've kind of been at the forefront of the movement to hire women in hockey. I'm not sure if you guys will remember this, but I think they hired Alexandra Mandrycki as director of hockey administration some time ago. And then in 2022, she brought Ron Francis on board. And then she was elevated to assistant general manager because of that. And then you'll remember as well, the Kraken added Cammy Granato, a legend in women's hockey, as the first pro women's scout in the NHL. That was in 2019. And then she became the assistant general manager with the Vancouver Canucks in 2022 in February. So I'm not terribly surprised that this is cracking. They seem to be pretty innovative. It doesn't seem like they're afraid of taking any risks. And Matty Beniers also said that he thought Campbell was a great coach from the start. He's quoted here saying, "I think she's just another coach, someone who worked really hard to get to where they were. Guys in Coachella all raved about her and said she was awesome. Their power play was really good. They all had great things to say about her, and I'm sure the organization and people hiring her went through the process and saw her qualifications. She's lived up to those expectations so far, and when you come to the rink, she's just another coach. So I think that things will work out pretty nicely for them.
Hopefully Seattle can make a run to the playoffs again after last year missing out. So, I mean, I've never been a huge fan of Seattle. I don't think that they're really an exciting team to watch. They remind me of the Western Conference version of the New Jersey Devils. Because I think the New Jersey Devils play some of the most boring hockey I've ever seen.
Yeah, and they do play boring hockey.
I don't know. Is this
recently, or have you watched them last season?
I would say in my time growing up and watching hockey, maybe.
Okay. They had one of the fastest power plays in the NHL last season. I agree, but prior to that, definitely they were.
I'm talking more Travis Zajac, Patrick Elias kind of years.
I agree.
Marty Brodeur, like they definitely relied on their goaltending a lot more and weren't as flashy on the offensive. Like when they made the Cup final in like 2012, I think it was, or 2011, or no, it had to be 2014, I think.
No, was it not 2012? They won the Stanley Cup. I'm pretty sure, because I remember NHL 13 coming out with Marty Brodeur on the case.
You're right.
Holding the Stanley Cup above his head.
No, New Jersey lost.
Did they lose? Did they not win the Stanley
Cup?
They
lost to the Kings.
What year did New Jersey win? They won in the 2000s.
Like 2004, maybe?
Was it 2003? Oh, maybe I'm getting the NHL video game case confused. But anyways, on a separate note, I guess we can move on to the NBA. We don't really give them much credit, but some pretty funny stuff's been happening.
Yeah.
I'll let you take it over from here, Kyle.
Well, you know, so we talked about this a bit last year, if I recall. It's kind of a weird situation. So the NBA works entirely differently than most sports leagues, right? Like they have huge salary caps and it's pretty loose in terms of signings and a lot of other things. The team's pretty small. So roster spots are pretty darn competitive. Like you usually don't have that many guys playing in any given game. There's some controversy with LeBron James getting supposedly not influencing the signing and pickup of his son into the NBA. Definitely a lot of criticisms on that one. He had a pretty mediocre performance in the NCAA. So much so that he certainly would not have been drafted. Had he not had some name recognition. He played his first other game the other night there. He had 13 minutes play time, 0 points, 2 rebounds, and some giveaways. So didn't make a huge splash. I don't think anyone expected that, but definitely an interesting scenario where you have like direct nepotism in the NBA. I mean, you know what? I saw some analysts going over the logistics of it, though. It was like, you know what? People know that deep down LeBron wants to play with his kid. And if they can sign his kid to keep him playing on their team, he's a billion-dollar man. Like he's worth that money, right? So as a business, I'm not that surprised. But yeah, crazy stuff. I can't imagine the same thing ever happening in hockey. But
no, certainly not. Adam, what's your take on the LeBron Bronny situation?
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. But I mean, Bronny just will sell tickets more than anyone else. Like that.
Wait, Bronny or LeBron? Sorry.
I mean, them together.
Oh, them together.
Sell tickets. I mean, obviously the Lakers don't really have issues doing that, but bringing Bronny on is, I would definitely say, more of a gimmick than anything. I really hope he proves everyone wrong and develop and like grows into like the basketball player he's supposed to be. He's just very undersized for a point guard.
How tall is he?
I think he's just 6'1.5". So,
I mean,
he's not really a natural point guard. If you watch him play, he plays like a small forward. He's just not big enough to be a small forward. So, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see how he turns out. Obviously, like, he doesn't have a great reputation right now with it just being that, like, he's kind of there just because of his dad. But, I mean, you can't really knock LeBron for it. I mean, he worked hard to become the greatest basketball player of all time, and now he gets his son gets to reap the benefits of that. So, I mean, is it fair? No, not really. But it's a business at the end of the day, like Kyle said. And I think that it will be interesting to see how he does. I mean, I'm definitely intrigued. I mean, at the end of the day, he's a storyline, right? Like if he goes and shuts everyone up and puts up like 20 points in his first game or something, then like, what are people going to say now? I think it's a good underdog story for a guy that really isn't an underdog. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't know. You just look at like other father-son duos, like the Griffies in the MLB, like that, they were both good. Mm. Like that was like Griffey Jr. was better than Griffey Sr. And I mean, it's just not the same as that. Like it's completely different with what we're seeing here. But
yeah.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of like a house situation.
You know what? I want to say, I think where it could get potentially interesting is somewhere like, let's say a playoff scenario. You know, what happens then? Is he benched? Or is he going to play?
G League, sent down to the minors.
I don't know, but I'm just saying, you know, that's when stuff starts to become interesting. If he's not playing well and he's still playing, then it starts to become interesting. So I don't know. I guess the coaching staff's got to be careful, but... Well, yeah, we'll definitely
see. But I think you made a good point, though, Adam. This certainly doesn't hurt the Lakers in terms of selling tickets. But on that note, a great expression: wars conquer continents, but money control war. So it's all a business at the end of the day.
Yeah. Someone else I heard a quote from that had realized that as well was Jeremy Swayman, right? So he had to go through arbitration for his original contract with the Bruins, and he. Yeah, he had a direct quote that said, he's like, that's when I realized, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the team I'm playing for is actually really, it is a business, right? Like, you know, there's money is, you know, the main driving factor behind a lot of things. But, you know, despite all that, Jeremy Swayman actually just recently signed with the Bruins after a long negotiation for deals for an $8.25 million contract. So,
yeah. A huge contract. I mean,
yeah, that's
great. I was a little surprised, actually. I thought that they may have like ruined the relationship between the two of them, but with the Cam Neely speaking out about how they offered him the $64 million contract, and then Swayman's agent coming back and be like, we were never offered that. And now all of a sudden it's, I guess they're just on good terms and now they signed. I mean, I thought that maybe another team would be able to swoop in there and steal away the other Bruins goalie, because I mean they already lost Allmark, right? So yeah, I thought it would be interesting to see. And the Bruins, I think, were prepared for that. I saw they picked up a few goalies off of waivers just in case Swayman wasn't there on opening day, but he did no training camp, he did no preseason, so
you got to figure he was still skating somewhere though.
Yeah,
I just don't know who with, if he was.
I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see.
You think he's going to come off a bit softer?
I think he'll be a bit rusty come the first week or first couple games, maybe. I'm just saying, I don't think he, actually, I don't think he will. I would not be surprised if he is a little rusty. I don't know. You see it in the NFL. A lot of guys hold out training camp because they want contracts. And the one that I remember right now is Ja'Marr Chase on the Bengals. He did not do any training camp or any preseason, and his contract expires in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was demanding a new contract.
Why so early?
Because he wants job security, and he wanted to know that he was valued by the team. They didn't sign him to 2 years. They didn't give him a contract, and he showed up played week one, but he hasn't really settled in until week five. So 5 weeks in, and like, he had a great game last weekend, but his first four games were like
rough
to watch. Yeah, because I mean, there's like a whole playbook and everything, and I'm sure it's different with the NFL, like especially with a goalie in the NHL. I mean, your job is to stop the puck, right? So
it's true, it's a bit different. Yeah,
doesn't really change too much, but I don't know.
Well, it takes a while to acclimatize yourself to the intensity of the shooting and the pace of the game, no matter what. Yeah. No matter what. I remember every single training camp I went back into, no matter how hard I trained in the summer, I was exhausted and destroyed physically after the first hour of ice, even after the first three sometimes.
Yeah.
So it takes a few games to get back in no matter what. So I don't disagree, but I would be surprised if Swayman has been off the ice this whole time.
Yeah. I don't know, but it'll be cool to see. I think Boston will be good again. So, I mean,
I don't think Boston will be bad, but I think the issue with Boston now is that they've lost the status of supreme powerhouse. I don't know if people are going to go into the season seeing Boston as the great bad bullies that they used to be.
Yeah, they had a lot of underappreciated bottom six guys that moved on, and I think that's actually going to have a bit of a harder hit than a lot of people would think, right? So I would say they're actually a tiny bit overranked right now. I think they're going to drop a little bit, but I think they're not going to fade out of the playoffs, but they'll definitely not be, you know, getting a President's Trophy or something this year, I would say.
No President's Trophy for them, absolutely. On a separate collegial note, maybe we'll talk a bit about Queens because this is a rare opportunity in which we've actually followed Queens sports a little bit, so that comes off really bad. But the Queens women's rugby team is coming off on a fantastic performance, having beaten McMaster's 123-3. Some kind of record, I suppose. But absolute dominance. Funny story, though. Kyle Adam and I have a few friends at McMaster's, and one of them, our good buddy from Ottawa, texted me asking me why my little sister, who plays on the rugby team, would dare post such a picture on her Instagram on Mac Hoco. I was like, well, she just played on the team and she had a few points. And he goes, but that's so mean. It's like bullying. It's Mac Hoco. So that didn't go over so great in McMaster's University. And then, yeah, well, maybe just what you both think about that 123-3 win. What does that mean for Queens?
Pretty sure that's the best game that McMaster's has played in a couple of years. So they should be celebrating, not disappointed in their terrific performance relative to what they've done before in the past.
Yeah, I'm surprised Queens let them get 3 points, honestly. I mean,
yeah, they let them get a kick.
I was going to say, man, that's pretty generous of them. But yeah, I know the rugby team looks great. Or maybe McMaster just looks really bad. Who knows?
Well, here's the way it works.
They're ranked number one. They're the number one team in the country right now. Ranked-wise. I saw the rankings.
Although, I think, for rugby, at least for women's rugby, the big three are really Queens, Guelph, and Laval.
And didn't they beat... They were losing to Guelph, and then they came back and beat them by, like, one.
Yeah, they did. Exactly right. They were down by double digits going into halftime, and then they turned on the Jets. So I think one of the advantages Queens has as well for that rugby team, and some of you who followed the Olympics this summer might remember her name, Chloe Daniels. She just won a silver medal with the Canadian national team in rugby sevens, and now she's back. She had taken 2 years off of school to go train with the Olympic team, and she's certainly a force to be reckoned with. And of course, there's lots of other girls coming off the U20 team that performed excellently well in Wales, having beaten Wales, the United States, and England. And England, usually the kind of the best team in the world for women's rugby at the U20 level. Wow. So Queens is certainly stacked, but the advantage that Laval has is that Cégep kind of allows them to have older players on the team. Mm-hmm. And also just the way Rugby Quebec works. Most of the players on the Laval rugby team are 25. Most of the players on the Queens women's rugby team are 21 or 20. So the fact that Queens is even able to compete with them is, I would think, a pretty significant, way to quantify their ability to be good.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting playoff season. I'm really excited for those ones.
It'll be good. Yeah. And also in men's Queens hockey, the Gaels won 6-3 against the York Lions. I think that was a bit of an expected win, but they started off the season with two wins, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But
And Sam Schoenfeld made his professional commentating debut, I heard.
Well, not professional. More like a volunteering broadcasting debut. But
okay, all right. How did you like it? Did you like being in the booth?
Yeah, the play-by-play certainly wasn't my thing just because I don't know everybody's last name yet.
Yeah.
But the commentary was pretty nice. I ended up on OUA Sports' Instagram account saying that was hockey after our nice goal. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, broadcasting's a unique experience. Not quite the same as radio, though certainly something I cherish.
I think we've got a future Don Cherry on our hands.
For better or worse.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, he coached last year, right?
Oh,
now
yeah.
He's moving on to commentating.
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
got to get Coach's Corner, John Tripp and Sam in the booth together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that will certainly last a long time on the CBC. But moving on, because we all play the same sport now together as well, this is a little bit odd. We don't usually talk about intramurals, but the three of us play on this fantastic water polo team called the Water Dragons. And let me say this. Inner tube water polo, which is the more legitimate form of water polo, is not as easy as it appears to the naked eye. Kyle, Adam, would you guys like to go through the dynamics of inner tube water polo?
I think, I'm going to say that this is, let's just say water polo as a larger whole is definitely, that's a more difficult sport than many would take it for. Super difficult sport, other than the fact that you're leisurely floating in a tube. But I guess you could say it's difficult. Definitely an interesting and unique sport. An interesting thing I heard, though, is that nowhere else but universities play inner tube water polo. So, you know, if you win the inner tube water polo championship here, you're asserting world dominance in terms of water polo inner tube champions, because there aren't too many of those.
No kidding. Adam, what are your thoughts on this inner tube water polo world championship?
Well, after I've heard that, I think we got to really
step
it up. Yeah, yeah. We got one win, one tie, and two losses.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know what I honestly think it is? the reffing. I think the refs need to have a little more accountability. I'm not calling, you know what? I am calling out Queens and Indiana. Like, they need to get their refs on it, man. Like, I want a fair match. I think that there's a few times where the offside wasn't called. And yeah. I mean, yeah.
We need to.
And I think, remember one game, our goalie was falsely accused of standing in the water in the shallow end.
Oh, yeah. Very, very falsely accused. It's just,
these ridiculous things. And that same player was also accused of flipping a tube when he was like 10 feet away from it. Just, such things are so infuriating. It's almost unbecoming.
Yeah. Yeah. We need to get some replays, instant replays. But yeah, well, let's move on to the NFL here. We got some, I guess, almost shocking / interesting news. Recent arrest of a NFL player. I mean, I guess that happens once in a while, but
once in a while.
I was about to say this isn't really shocking. This is like every other day in the NFL.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, what's that supposed to imply?
I don't know. It just is. Like, I don't know.
They just got a lot of players.
Yeah.
The big roster.
Yeah. Greater quantity of players.
Yeah, they've got a lot of players, better odds of one of them getting arrested. But yeah, so New England Patriots captain actually on defense, Jabril Peppers, got arrested for assault, strangulation, and multiple drug charges. So these are some pretty hefty accusations. And I mean, now that it's going to court, it's not looking good for Peppers. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him suited up on Sunday, because that's kind of how it works in the NFL. I mean, like Von Miller, for example, Buffalo Bills linebacker. He last year went through a little kerfuffle with his girlfriend, where his girlfriend charged him with domestic assault.
Mm-hmm.
And the NFL didn't even bring down their punishment until last week. What? So this happened a season ago, and now he's suspended. And he never went to jail. They ended up settling outside of court. So it's an interesting way the NFL operates with when it comes to their players getting arrested. Yeah. There's also a few players actually that have been involved in hit and runs. And I know Rashee Rice of the Kansas City Chiefs was involved in a hit and run last summer and hasn't been charged or anything like that.
I saw a super weird video of, I want to say Tyreek Hill actually getting arrested outside the Dolphins stadium. Yeah,
that was crazy.
He did.
That was more police brutality than anything though.
Yeah.
That
was, like, video was pretty weird because it's, you know what? The interaction with him wasn't great, though. There's a kind of this aggressive cop, but it was the interaction after when his friends pulled up to try to understand what was happening.
And the other player, Calais Campbell, showed up. Yeah.
That interaction with the police officer there, I thought that was really weird. Like, it was very aggressive. I don't know. I know that there was quite a bit of backlash after that. So, I mean, Tyreek didn't end up getting in trouble or anything, but it was, definitely, that was really weird. I don't know what happened there.
I think I remember seeing something that the officer was sent to desk duty. I'm pretty sure he's not even on the road anymore.
No. Oh, really?
Yeah, just because he was too aggressive during the confrontation, and it didn't really make any sense, like, how he treated the people that he was arresting. It was very interesting.
Just escalated for no reason, I guess, is the idea. Yes,
definitely escalated, and definitely if they were white, I guarantee it would have not had the same result.
Sad.
Yeah.
It is what it is. But just a new article that just came out. Canucks Joshua and Demko are both out for roughly 3 to 4 weeks. That's not a great start of the year for Vancouver in the NHL. Yeah.
You know what? As one does before the fantasy season, you do a little bit of research on players, and I, like many others, came to the conclusion that picking up Demko as a starting goalie was a bad decision, just because he was definitely an iffy pick in terms of health. Does not surprise me, to be honest. And I made the very intuitive decision, and I would say brilliant decision, of picking up Seelos.
Oh, the backup?
For free, and I knew he was going to end up playing a lot of minutes, so we'll see where that leads.
Look at this guy, fantasy guru over here, Kyle Sampson. Hit him up if you need any.
Champion last year, champion this year, we'll see.
Well, you know.
In a league with Ross?
Yeah.
You still won?
I didn't trade anyone.
Well, to the viewer, our dearest friend Ross Torrey, who goes to Dalhousie University in Halifax, God bless his soul, likes to rig these fantasy leagues. What he does is he gets a lot of people who have no idea how to play fantasy, who may have never even touched ice before. In fact, I'm not sure if they know what frozen water is. And they join this league, and all of a sudden, they draft amazing players who just end up on Ross's roster for what I would describe as nothing more than ECHL accidental call-ups to the NHL.
Yeah.
So
in the financial sector, we refer to these as rug pulls, right? So you load up, load up with some money, and then, you know, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, all the players evaporate and end up on one team, and you're gone. You're out of the game, right? So that's about what it looks like. Oh man, that's awesome, man. I don't know how you compete. Just smart drafting, I guess.
Just gotta play smart, and then I think the main thing, and this is so hard with a lot of things in general. I mean, is to not play with bias, and it is so difficult because everyone falls in that trap, right?
Where you don't draft any Senators players.
I draft a couple because they usually go late, but
all right.
I did have a little bit of a mistake and took up Shabbat, but you know, we'll see. You know what? I drafted him pretty late, and I think he might bounce back a little bit.
Who's your first round pick?
First, I have McDavid. So
McDavid again. Wait,
you got first overall pick again?
Yeah. Potential scandal.
Back-to-back years with Connor McDavid?
Wow.
Oh,
hey, and all this time we thought it was Ross rigging the league.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Lord Sidious was sitting right before us, and the count was only executing his will.
Nathan MacKinnon had more points than him last year anyways.
Oh, man. I don't know if that's going to happen this year, though.
I don't know.
I think McDavid's taken over. I think 160 points.
For McDavid?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah, maybe.
Even if you look at last year, he missed like six games. Or more. He might have missed...
I think he missed eight games in a row.
Like he missed quite a few games. Like, he would have had quite... he had less points per game than the year previous.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong. But it was not by... It was a very small margin of the difference, actually. So,
yeah.
He was basically on track for about the same as the year previous.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Well, cool story about McDavid and Draisaitl. I met this gentleman the other day who has just finished playing in the NHL. He played with Edmonton for a bit. But he's kind of an up-and-down guy between the NHL and the AHL through most of his career. He really played two solid years in the NHL, but still a fantastic guy. 200 NHL games, 1,100 AHL games. And he told me that there's this game that they used to play, which I used to play too when I trained for hockey, essentially in the neutral zone. So for those of you who don't know what that is who watch hockey, there's the goal line, the blue line, the red line, the blue line, the goal line. It's the zone in between the two blue lines that's split in half by the red line. What the Edmonton Oilers used to do for the first 10 minutes of every practice is that every single player, coaches and goalies as well, would stick handle in the neutral zone. And the game was that every time you skate by someone, you try and poke check the puck off their stick and knock it out of the zone. And once the puck's knocked out of your stick, your only job is to go around knocking the puck off other people's stick. And apparently every single game, without relent, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl were the last two guys with the puck every single time. And Connor McDavid would usually lose the puck around the 8th minute mark when there's 6 to 7 guys on him. And Leon Draisaitl would literally not lose the puck no matter what. People would come and try and whack his stick and whatnot. And he'd just flick it in the air and somehow catch it on his stick and dodge everyone. There'd be 20 guys chasing him in the neutral zone. And he'd not lose the puck.
The thing I noticed is if you really pay attention to how Draisaitl moves in the ice, he does not move fast. He's not that fast of a skater. Like relative in terms of like, you know, compared to other skaters in the ice, like everyone's pretty fast. He's not slow. But he's certainly not burning people with speed most of the time. He just out stick handles them. Like you just, yeah. He's so...
His positioning is so fantastic.
Oh yeah, but he really leans on his stick. Like he's, you're not lifting that stick at all. Like there's no way. Like he's got so much pressure on the ice and he turns his back to you and he's almost more dangerous on the backhand. That's the other thing. So you're not safe if he's got his backhand open or his forehand, right? So it makes it really hard to kind of get that puck off him. And yeah, it's not easy.
No, most certainly not. But maybe I think we have a bit of time left. Should we talk about the NFL? Because we haven't really spoken about it too much. But maybe just like a little update on week five now?
Yeah, week five. There's the Monday night game tonight, which will happen by the time this releases. But week five went not great for my Buffalo Bills. They lost again. They lost to Houston on a game-winning field goal, a 59-yard field goal to end the game. Very disheartening. But around the league, there was a few exciting games. The Ravens and the Bengals played a high-scoring nail-biter that resulted in a game-winning field goal as well. Some other team, notable teams. The Vikings picked up a win. They were playing in the UK, so they played really early, and that was a good game to watch to get the Sunday started. They played the Jets, so it was a very eventful game.
Where'd they play in the United Kingdom?
Tottenham Stadium.
Oh, so just outside London.
Yeah, it was nice. Good facilities, good field. I would say it was a pretty average week in the NFL. Nothing too exciting happened. Mm-hmm. Not too many upsets. I would say the teams that were projected to win won their games.
I heard that these England tours for the NFL produce a lot of money.
They do. They have one next week as well, too. So it's the international games are definitely a moneymaker for the NFL, and it's good at growing the game, too.
Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. So thank you guys for tuning in again this week. And we're happy to see you guys next week with some more sports updates. Hopefully the NHL season will get rolling nice and soon.